Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech or of the press. Those words, as most of you know, are enshrined in the very First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. The press historically has taken it to mean that anyone is free to report, investigate, and publish matters of importance to the public without fear of retribution from our government. But that hasn't stopped presidential administrations from trying to prosecute those who publish things they'd rather not want the public to know. For example, the Nixon administration in the 1970s was unsuccessful in trying to prosecute the New York Times and Washington Post or reporters from there under the Espionage Act for publishing the Pentagon Papers. Freedom of speech and of the press has also been long interpreted generously by the Supreme Court to protect anyone, member of the mainstream press corps or not, to print and say what they will. So on Thursday, the publisher of WikiLeaks, Julian Assange, was charged with 18 criminal counts under the Espionage Act in connection with publishing documents in October 2010. This did not have to do with WikiLeaks and the 2016 election. This is documents in October 2010, specifically for unlawful obtaining and disclosing of national defense information, allegedly, regarding military conduct in Guantanamo Bay and the Iraq War. Now, there are arguments about whether Julian Assange is a journalist. Members of the media and advocates who keep close eyes on issues surrounding the First Amendment are saying these indictments against him are dangerous, and he should be seen as a member of the media in this context. They say that this prosecution could violate the First Amendment and put all investigative journalism potentially at risk. Here to help us tease out these issues and argue their points of view are Suzanne Nossel. She is the chief executive officer of PEN America, the Human Rights and Free Expression Organization. She was just here last week with Anita Hill, some of you may remember, on Hill's Courageous Speech, and she is back with us now. We also have Fred Kaplan, national security columnist and war stories columnist for Slate. His most recent piece is titled, "You Don't Have to Like Julian Assange to Be Outraged by the Charges Against Him." Fred is also the author of the very relevant book, Dark Territory, The Secret History of Cyber War. So thanks for joining us, Fred and Suzanne. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having us.
Fred Kaplan, as a member of the press, is Julian Assange a member of the press?
Well, it's kind of irrelevant in this context. What he was indicted for, this is from the language from the indictment, is that he, quote, repeatedly sought, obtained, and disseminated information that the United States classified. That's what journalists do all the time. So it is under the Espionage Act, and I would urge readers to go look up the Espionage Act. It is 18 U.S. Code Section 793. It was passed in 1917. It has never been revised. It has rarely been actually cited in a court. It's made, like, the most prominent person that it was used against was Julius and Ethel Rosenberg for, you know, providing secrets about the atomic bomb to the Russians. But it covers just about everything. But technically, Brian, you could be indicted for reading a newspaper story that had classified information in it and telling somebody else what's in it.
Nah.
I mean, read it. It's an incredible, it's a monstrous piece of legislation that really should be repealed. Actually, under the Espionage Act, Julian Assange could be indicted, but so could Bob Woodward, Seymour Hersh, me, I mean, any number of people. It's a monstrous act, and those few cases where a journalist or somebody receiving information has been indicted, the case has been thrown out because it seems to be such a spurious kind of random event.
Suzanne Nossel, I think you're on the same page as Fred on that basic premise that for the purposes of this case, there's no distinction between Julian Assange and the New York Times or the Washington Post?
You know, very hard to make a distinction. I mean, certainly there's some things Assange did in this case, or is alleged to have done, that go beyond what a mainstream news outlet would do. I mean, particularly the first indictment that was brought about 5 weeks ago, you know, focused specifically on this charge of computer hacking and hacking into a password to get beyond the government national security infrastructure and penetrate and allow Chelsea Manning to pass through all of these documents. And, you know, that I think you could say is not what a mainstream news outlet or a journalist would do. But there's so much in the revised indictment, this 18-count indictment, that is like the bread and butter of investigative journalism, cultivating a source, urging that source to provide information, talking about the mechanisms and means through which that can be done. So the way this has been drafted and the breadth of it is so great that it is impossible to be confident that, you know, the ordinary work of journalists won't be encompassed and imperiled by this.
And listeners, our phones are open for anything you want to say or ask about the indictment of Julian Assange under the Espionage Act in relation to his allegedly encouraging Chelsea Manning to release Iraq war documents and other things in 2010. 212-433-WNYC for Fred Kaplan from Slate and Suzanne Nossel from PEN America. 212-433-9692. Just to make the distinction really clear, Suzanne, you would say there's a distinction between Chelsea Manning, who is the actual intelligence analyst with access who leaked the stuff, and Julian Assange, who used WikiLeaks to publish it, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I mean, Chelsea Manning, you know, was already convicted and served her sentence. Her sentence was commuted by President Obama. So that was a much more open and shut case and did not raise implications for press freedom in the way that this does. You know, Assange's role is different. He didn't have access, you know, primary access to the documents. It, you know, it was his role to sort of encourage and elicit the cooperation of Chelsea Manning. And I think, you know, a lot of this will turn on how far he went in doing this and whether, you know, those tactics went beyond what any journalist would do. But so much of the indictment is, you know, activities that any editor, investigative journalist worth their salt would undertake mm-hmm. to cultivate a source. So that's what's so alarming about it.
Fred, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, yeah, the one case that Suzanne talked about, the hacking into a computer, which was an indictment of about 5 weeks ago, which at the time I wrote was kind of, you know, the Justice Department was pulling an Al Capone on Assange. They didn't like a lot of what he did, but they took the one case where he really could pretty straightforwardly been indicted, just as Al Capone was finally sent to jail for, you know, violating, for not paying income tax. That's something else. Journalists don't do that. I also wanted to correct one thing that you said. In the Pentagon mm-hmm. Papers case, the New York Times was not indicted on the Espionage Act. They were issued an injunction to not publish. And then there was a hearing on that, whether they could, you know, be allowed to publish. Daniel Ellsberg, who leaked it, was indicted under the Espionage Act. So this, mm-hmm. I don't think, maybe Suzanne could correct
so
me.
So he was the Chelsea Manning of his day, and he got off, some would argue, on a technicality.
He would say that himself, by the way.
Yes.
Because the judge was offered a bribe, essentially, by the Nixon administration. He was offered a big job, and he threw the case out. No, Ellsberg will freely tell you that if that hadn't happened, he very well may have gone to jail for quite a long time.
Mm-hmm. So do you agree with Suzanne in the distinction that she's making, if I understand it correctly, that there are actually things that Assange could be indicted for if he went beyond what journalistic practices would do, but there's so much in there that are things that journalists do that he's also being indicted for, that's what makes it unconscionable. Like, if the way I've heard it described is accurate, would you, as a national security journalist, encourage an intelligence analyst who's willing to leak documents to go back and look for more or go get this. I don't know exactly the words that they say that Assange used, but there's a line there between, as a journalist, receiving documents and talking to your source to try to clarify what's there that may be illegally taken from the government and made public to you. But then there's a line beyond which you would become a participant rather than a recipient.
Well, I don't think legally, I don't think there's any distinction between politely asking once and aggressively asking 10 times. I mean, it's the same action.
But politely asking what? Politely asking, will you go steal some more?
Could I take a look at that? Could I take a look at that document? Or, you know, it's not even releasing a document. There was one case where somebody was indicted for leaking, and three other people were indicted for receiving, but the case ended. Mm-hmm. Just orally transmitted information, just describing stuff that was classified. But look, I've asked. I don't look. It's very rare that a journalist would be that explicit about it. Yeah, give me that top secret document. But yeah, sure. No, you ask if you could, just for a clarification about something. And you know, there's so much overclassification in the system. I mean, you know, that's another thing that a lot of people would be surprised by, the amount of stuff that is classified. For example, when a president of the United States has a conversation with a foreign leader about anything, it is ipso facto classified secret.
Let's take a phone call. Ellie on Long Island. You're on WNYC. Did I say your name right? Is it Ellie?
It's Elle. Thank you so very much for taking my call. My question is this. Julian Assange is not an American citizen, but he's being charged, you know, as an American citizen. What does his country of origin say where he is a citizen? And if the shoe were on the other foot, if, for example, Henry Kissinger has been known to have been called a war criminal, could, you know, other countries subject America to the same type of request, you know, that they that we, in essence, America would have to
You're worried about him being extradited to the United States as... Suzanne, let me get you on this.
Sure.
She's worried about Assange being extradited to the United States to face these charges because I guess she's saying it may create a tit-for-tat where Americans will be charged overseas.
Yeah, I think she's asking, you know, would it be, how would we react if an American were to be charged overseas? And, you know, it's a valid question. I mean, the reason that this indictment is only coming down now is that Assange has been holed up in the Ecuadorian embassy in London for years trying to escape an extradition request. He faces an extradition request to Sweden where he's been charged with sexual assault, and now this huge indictment here in the U.S. And that proceeding will play out over a long period, and he'll make all sorts of arguments about why he faces a form of legal jeopardy that should immunize him from being extradited. But there are extradition treaties, there are legal assistance treaties where countries are able to prosecute nationals of other countries and bring them back to face charges when they've committed a crime. So this is happening pursuant to that, and there are U.S. nationals who are charged and convicted in foreign courts.
Alex in Prospect Heights, you're on WNYC. Hi, Alex.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Okay.
Thanks for hosting the segment. First of all, it's a very important topic, and I'm happy to hear this. Just wanted to make two comments. One was that one thing that I've seen but haven't heard about, reported a lot, is that the Obama Department of Justice actually knew about these allegations about Julian Assange, but concluded that it couldn't and should not prosecute him because indicting him would pose serious threats to press freedom. So these new allegations actually new, and it's something that was known by the Obama DOJ. And the other thing is that what I hear widely reported is that this is the indictments are based on hacking, but actually reading the indictment, it says that it's simply accusing Assange of trying to help Chelsea Manning log into the DOD computers anonymously so she could maintain her anonymity. Mm-hmm. So what I would ask your guest is, isn't that just protecting your sources as a journalist would do, since they've been saying it's something different?
Thank you, Alex. Fred, go ahead.
you're conflating two things. There was an indictment 5 weeks ago, which was talking about helping to crack a code to get into a classified computer. Then there was an indictment, a supplemental indictment, as they called it, or a superseding indictment, which added on 17 other charges, which have to do strictly with receiving and publishing classified information. So those are the two things. And yes, I mean, this is something that some people are confused about. This has nothing to do with Assange's involvement in the 2016 election and hacking into and publishing or receiving and publishing Hillary Clinton campaign emails. It has nothing to do with that. This is this old case which got Chelsea Manning prosecuted in a military court, you know, 8-9 years ago. And you're right, the Obama administration decided not to indict Assange because it would become a First Amendment case. And speaking to the previous caller's question, she mentioned Henry Kissinger. There are a few countries, and I can't remember which ones they are, where Henry Kissinger very well could be arrested if he went there. And, in World War II or afterwards, the U.S. indicted German citizens for under the Espionage Act for helping Nazi causes inside the United States. So it's not. Now, the other thing, then, this might be where Julian Assange gets a break from overzealousness. The British government has a very good record, or call it good, bad, whatever, of not extraditing people who they think are about to be prosecuted for strictly political reasons. Mm. And they could look at this that way. Also, the fact that there are 17 counts carrying, each of them carrying possibility of 10 years in jail, they could see this as excessive.
Do you see this as political persecution rather than prosecution?
Yeah, I do.
You do. Suzanne, do you? Political.
Is it politically motivated? I mean, yes and no. I think the Obama administration, also was up in arms about WikiLeaks. That's why, and the Manning prosecution demonstrates that. So it's not as if it's purely, motivated by the Trump administration's, for example, animus toward the press, although that's part of the picture, certainly, and part of why this is so concerning and why the sense of constraint that the Obama administration had. They were very tough on leakers. They had more prosecutions of leakers than any other prior administration during Obama, and there are glaring gaps in whistleblower protection. That's another piece of the context here that we have documented at PEN America.
But Obama administration stayed off the press.
They did. They drew that line.
So, and Suzanne, do you happen to know who made this decision to indict Assange in the Trump administration or in the Trump era on the same grounds that the Obama administration looked at, objected to him for, and decided not to? Do either of you know, Suzanne? Do you know?
I don't know. I mean, it's risky to speculate on that kind of thing, but I would guess that a zealous prosecutor is going to look at someone like Assange and recognize he's a very unpopular figure for 100 different reasons, whether it's his meddling in the 2016 election, and his political motivations for that, or the blunderbuss nature of these disclosures. I mean, this is not a leak that was designed to expose one particular policy or effectuate a specific change in how the U.S. government was going about its business. It was massive, and indiscriminate. And, while they in the beginning worked with journalists to be careful about redacting names of individuals. I mean, I was working at the State Department during the WikiLeaks disclosure period, and I was briefly on a task force to respond to the WikiLeaks disclosures. And there was really a sense of alarm about individuals who would be, lives would be in danger. People who had worked with the U.S., provided information, human rights defenders who had spoken to embassy personnel on a confidential basis. There is a problem of overclassification, but there's also good reason to classify a lot of this stuff. And they made no distinction between which was legitimately classified and not. So I think recognizing in this environment and with the Trump administration that this was maybe a prosecution that the political environment and moment would tolerate may have emboldened the prosecutors in this case.
Fred, let me ask you a question about that same thing, and then we're going to be out of time. This looks like an incredible twofer politically for Donald Trump. And again, I don't know if he influenced the bringing of charges at this time or if it went all the way up to Attorney General Barr, who seems to have an interest in protecting Trump when it comes to the Russia investigation and things like that. But the twofer is Trump, who campaigned on I Love WikiLeaks when they were leaking things about Hillary Clinton. And people don't like that. People think that was unconscionable because they don't want to support the dissemination of Russian hacking of, you know, American political parties. So he gets to now look tough on WikiLeaks, but at the same time gets to crack down on his enemies, as he says, enemies of the people, the press. So going after Julian Assange, making his hands look clean, and going after the press because he can use Assange as a way into weakening press freedoms, an incredible political twofer if he can pull it off.
That could be. I think, though, and first, I should also add that I, you know, whatever WikiLeaks might have been originally, I think it's, in the last few years, it's pretty much just become a Kremlin tool. I really have very little respect for Julian Assange.
And nonetheless, you support Assange in this case.
Yeah, well, because this is a crazy case. I think it's quite likely that all but the one indictment that was brought forth 5 weeks ago, if the Eastern District Court in Virginia, which is in Alexandria, treats this case as it has similar cases, it's quite likely that all 17 of these, that 17 of the 18 charges will be thrown out. As I say, it's also quite possible that Britain will not extradite him to the United States. So if this was a political, if it was strictly a political motivation to, you know, give Trump a twofer, as you say, it might be an overreach. It might have been a drastic overreach.
In fact,
the case, I think, is so weak, and it's kind of crazy that they put forth this indictment now before he was extradited. I mean, one small dark part of me thinks that it might be some mid-level Justice Department guy trying to sabotage the case.
Huh. Would they hear this case if they can't extradite him? Would he be tried in absentia? Or they don't do that?
Right.
Huh?
I'd be very surprised.
I don't think they do that. You've got the right to confront your accusers. So.
Yeah, you have to.
Thank you both. Suzanne Nossel, Chief Executive Officer of PEN America, and Fred Kaplan, War Stories columnist for Slate and author of the book Dark Territory, The Secret History of Cyber War. Thank you both.